Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
Nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Coming up on the Midday News, update from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization. Also, a famous mural in Seward gets a redo. Southeast Alaska's ancient history is highlighted. And it looks like there's community spread of COVID-19 in the city of Dillingham after a surge of cases last week. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. In an exchange of briefs on the eve of former President Trump's second impeachment trial, House Democrats are dismissing the defense's arguments. Here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
Trump's lawyers argue that it isn't constitutional to hold an impeachment trial for a former president, and that Trump's rhetoric wasn't intended to inspire violence. Trump has been impeached and faces trial on a single count of incitement of insurrection after his supporters stormed the Capitol to stop certification of the election results, following weeks of Trump denying the election outcome and encouraging his supporters at a rally that day to go to the Capitol and fight like hell. The House impeachment managers write that the defenses set out by Trump's team are, quote, wholly without merit and later, quote, utterly baseless. They say inciting an insurrection is an impeachable offense, isn't subject to a motion to dismiss, and should be considered by the Senate. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
The impeachment trial will take place under coronavirus restrictions designed to reduce the risk of senators getting infected. Lawmakers have already lost one colleague to the pandemic. Two-term Representative Ron Wright died yesterday, about 2 weeks after he was diagnosed with COVID-19. He was 67 years old. The onset of more contagious variants of the virus is fueling the push to get more people vaccinated more quickly. Some scientists argue that the Biden administration should delay the second dose of the coronavirus vaccine so more people can get there first. And NPR's Richard Harris reports public health leaders warn that's not a good idea.
The United Kingdom has been delaying time between doses to accelerate rollout of its vaccine. But that's a different vaccine, and there's no data showing that strategy would work with the vaccines in use here. At a White House briefing, Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease doctor, said even studying the question doesn't make sense.
That study, with all due respect, would take several months to get a meaningful answer. At that time, the amount of vaccine that would be available would almost be making that question somewhat of a moot point.
Fauci has consistently said that his strategy is to get people fully protected as quickly as possible, rather than giving more people partial immunity with a single dose. Richard Harris, NPR News.
Masks and social distancing are still considered the most effective weapons against the pandemic. Frontline medical workers have been saying that for months. Still, thousands of football fans, many of them without masks, fled the streets of Tampa to celebrate the Buccaneers' Super Bowl victory last night, despite a mask order. Mayor Jane Castor says that's not the norm.
There just has to be that level of personal responsibility. You can supply everyone with a mask, advise them of the science behind it, and expect that they are going to abide by the mask order.
Mayor Castor is heard on WFTS. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported one new close contact case for Saturday and no other new cases for Monday, as of Monday morning. This brings the total case count for the Kodiak Island Borough to 1,047 cases since the start of the pandemic, and just 10 active cases overall as of today. As of Saturday, there had been 42 hospitalizations and 5 deaths related to COVID-19 on the Kodiak Island Borough. There are currently no current active COVID-19 hospitalizations locally. Several academic researchers who document Southeast Alaska's ancient history are highlighting the need to retain more Native researchers in a lecture series hosted by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. In 1996, the remains of a man now called Shuka Ka were found in a cave on Prince of Wales. James Dixon, an anthropology professor at the University of New Mexico, was a lead researcher in that excavation. He says Shuka Ka, or Man Ahead of Us, brings to light the origins of Tlingit, Haida, and the Tsimshian people. But what set this excavation apart from others isn't just that Shuka Ka as was found, but how the researchers treated his remains. There were a number of meetings. People listened to each other and worked together very cooperatively throughout the excavations and subsequent analysis and then the reburial of Shukaha's remains. These types of excavations, especially when they involve the ancestors of people who live nearby, haven't always gone well. Around the same time in Washington State, the remains of so-called Kennewick Man were found. The almost complete skeleton was an ancestor was a big deal at the time, but the way it was handled by scientists was controversial. The discovery of Shuka Ka was handled more respectfully by those involved in research. Clarence Jackson, an elder involved in the naming of Shuka Ka, said he believed that he came to the people of Southeast Alaska at a time when they needed him because he had a story to tell. Ripon Molly has been working with indigenous communities in Southeast Alaska for over a decade and is currently a paleogenomics researcher in Illinois. He says the ethical questions, like the ones raised by the ancestor in Washington, highlights the need for more indigenous researchers in fields like paleogenomics. He says anthropologists in the past, as well as geneticists in the past, have approached their science in a way that was not inclusive and had colonial tendencies. But Molly says the field has grown more collaborative in recent years. These days, at least in publications, there's now at least a section on ethics and community engagement in the body of the paper, whereas that wouldn't have existed even 5 years ago. Molly is also part of an effort to bring more Native researchers to study ancient DNA called the Summer Internship for Indigenous Peoples in Genomics, or SING. He says what's unique about that workshop is that all of the faculty involved are Indigenous researchers or work closely with Native communities. Alyssa Bader, an anthropologist who is Tsimshian, was a student in the SING Consortium studying ancient DNA of ancestors in British Columbia. Bader says that as a student with SING, she saw more indigenous scientists in one place than ever before, but there's still more room for researchers like her. She says that while the ethics of research is more inclusive than it once was, it's also about being welcoming. And she goes on to say, it just makes more sense to have researchers from a variety of perspectives. There is likely community spread of COVID-19 in the city of Dillingham after a surge of cases last week. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports that the health corporation, tribe, and city are urging residents to remain vigilant and follow safety measures.
6 people in Dillingham tested positive for COVID-19 late last week, according to the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, which announced the cases on Friday. The source of infection is unknown, and the health corporation says they appear to be unrelated to earlier cases. The people who tested positive and their households have been advised to isolate, and the state public health team is working to identify their contacts. Last week's case count came to a total of 13, the most resident cases Dillingham has seen in 1 week. 7 Dillingham residents tested positive for COVID-19 early last week, and people in Dillingham's schools were potentially exposed. The state's public health team has completed contact tracing for those cases. Students, staff, and family who are close contacts will receive information about where and when to test. That testing is separate from the mass testing event held Sunday. BBAHC said results from those tests will be available by the middle of this week. In a joint letter Friday, the Cheokryong Tribal Council, the city, the public health center, and the school district underscored the effect of the recent outbreak on the community. They said, quote, "The value of lost classroom time for our students, lost work time, and the burden to citizens is immeasurable," unquote. They said the outbreak demonstrated how quickly the virus can spread in a community. The senior center closed due to the cases, and the library switched back to curbside service. Meanwhile, they say Sunday's mass testing event cost thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours of staff time. They encouraged everyone to continue to follow safety precautions, wear masks, social distance, and get tested if you experience symptoms or suspect you've been exposed to COVID-19. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Twitter says it made a mistake by temporarily suspending an Alaska political journalist from its social media platform. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the reporter's offending tweet had paraphrased a state lawmaker's baseless assertion that COVID-19 vaccines had left people paralyzed.
Matt Buxton has covered Alaska politics for nearly a decade, 5 years as a newspaper reporter in Fairbanks, and more recently as the editor of The Midnight Sun, a left-leaning political blog from his home in Anchorage.
The way I cover the legislature is, you know, through Twitter, really. I am kind of a prolific live tweeter, kind of cover meetings in as much detail as I can, sort of pulling out the interesting stuff. And so during this hearing, I thought some very interesting stuff was that Senator Laura Reinbold from Eagle River was asking about hydroxychloroquine and sort of other debunked things.
Reinbold has made headlines in recent months for calling Alaska Airlines flight attendants mask bullies for requiring passengers to cover their faces. She's also asserted that state and local pandemic-related health mandates are a violation of civil liberties.
And so towards the end of the meeting, she's talking about how it's important because the vaccine is causing deaths and paralysis and people are dying.
Mr. Chairman, this is a huge issue. There could be people dying, paralyzed, deaths. I just need to know, yes or no, do they have to sign informed consent? And where's the liability lie if there's an adverse event? I think that's a very fair question.
It is a fair question, but if you wanted to give us...
After that exchange, Buxton tweeted, quote, "Wilson is trying to cut her off, but not before Reinbold can throw in something about people being paralyzed by the vaccine."
And that's sort of the claim that got me in trouble, actually. So that was flagged as vaccine disinformation.
But Buxton says he didn't know about that right away. In fact, he spent the rest of the afternoon using Twitter normally. But he later found an email that came in just after midnight.
And I found out about it like at 3 a.m. when I was running a dog out, a sick dog outside. And so I appealed it then, went to bed, came back, and it had been rejected. In the appeal letter, I wrote, look, I'm a reporter, and I was reporting on what a state senator was saying. I think this is pretty relevant. And with my appeal being denied right away, I just deleted the tweet and kind of started to sit out my 12-hour penalty, I guess.
He was blocked from live tweeting until after 6 p.m. Thursday. But while Buxton sat in Twitter jail, Senator Reinbold used a committee hearing to raise questions about the safety of COVID-19 vaccines.
I am not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm concerned about this new type of vaccine that is out there, that they are only strictly under emergency use authorization.
So then she pressed Alaska's chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, about rumors that Alaskans are dying from the COVID-19 vaccine.
And to date, there are no deaths associated with the COVID-19 vaccine, Moderna or Pfizer, in the United States.
Wow, that is amazing, because I'm certainly following COVID reactions online, and I'm also following theirs. And I tell you, I think that's definitely contradicts things that I've definitely been following online.
Buxton says he'd like to know what got him in trouble with the social media platform. Was it artificial intelligence? Were there complaints directed at his tweets? But in the meantime, he's more concerned about misinformation going unchallenged.
You know, I came back out, out of my Twitter jail, and I saw that, the Anchorage Daily News had a story debunking misinformation about how 5 people were killed by the vaccine. This is a thing that is going on, and I think we need to really meet head first. And I think it's important to call out, elected officials when they are spreading kind of, clearly dangerous information.
A Twitter spokesperson said Friday it had made a mistake by suspending Buxton's account, but the company hasn't explained what triggered the suspension. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Over 100,000 Alaskans have received their first dose of vaccine against COVID-19, according to the state's vaccination website. The state hit that milestone last Friday. Almost 40,000 Alaskans have received both doses, which are required to have full protection against the disease. That puts Alaska behind only one state, West Virginia, for the percentage of residents who have received both doses, according to the New York Times. Currently, the state is vaccinating Alaskans over 65 and frontline healthcare workers. It expects to expand that to other tiers in late February or early March. A Haines man was mauled by a bear on Saturday while backcountry snowboarding behind Chilkoot Lake. The U.S. Coast Guard transported him to Juneau, where he's being treated for injuries to his head and hands. The mauling occurred off the Glory Hole Trail, about 1,600 feet above Chilkoot Lake. The Alaska State Troopers requested assistance from the Coast Guard around 3:20 p.m. on Saturday. A Jayhawk helicopter crew from Air Station Sitka responded to transport the man to a hospital. Two other skiers in the party used a satellite communications device to provide the precise coordinates and elevation of their location. They had brightly colored fabric to signal the helicopter as it approached. The air crew successfully hoisted the injured man into the helicopter and provided medical care while in transit to Juneau. The man's current condition is unknown. However, Coast Guard personnel say he was responsive and talking during the rescue. The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race has canceled this year's ceremonial start in Anchorage. The cancellation stems from concerns about holding a large gathering during the pandemic. That's according to a statement Friday from our Iditarod chief executive, Bob Urbach. Normally, each year, the Iditarod team start their race in Anchorage with an 11-mile parade-like event that draws crowds of spectators to the city's streets and trails. Then they head to Willow for the official race start. This year, the teams will begin their race on Sunday, March 7th in Deshka in Willow. That's also where they will end their race. Instead of going to Nome, the teams are traveling an 860-mile out-and-back course.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Recycle your worn and torn fishing bibs into upscale bags. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Hose off those worn and torn fishing bibs and recycle them into rugged sea bags and more. A Maine fishing family needs more bibs for its Rugged Seas line, launched at the popular Fisherman's Forum last March. Since then, the bib gear has taken off.
People are really excited about it. I mean, we've had people send us their bibs from Canada, from Rhode Island, up and down the East Coast, from Washington State. It's been really exciting.
Nikki Strout co-owns Rugged Seas with her husband, Taylor, a lifelong lobsterman who also has fished out of Dutch Harbor since 2012. Nikki says he was inspired by all the fishery-related hoodies and T-shirts he saw there and started designing similar wear for Maine.
And so we're trying to think of something that each fishery has that, you know, is very identifiable, and we thought of bibs. We thought, what do guys do with their bibs when they just throw them away? Is there a way that we could repurpose these used bibs?
The Strouts also connected with well-known oilskin maker Guy Cotton to take all their remnants for Rugged Seas gear. A portion of all sales goes to local fishing groups, and Nikki says it's all about highlighting the lifestyle.
It's a hard lifestyle. The work they do, and then being a family that, you know, we haven't seen Taylor in 8 weeks now, it's tough. So to kind of tell a story with every bag we make, that's the whole goal.
Strout says a goal is to get bib drop barrels in Alaska fishing towns, but for now they'll offer free Rugged Seas gear to cover the costs of shipping them to Maine.
They can ship directly to us, and I would be very happy to send some free gear out to anybody who wants to donate their old bibs or jackets or whatever they have.
Visit ruggedseas.com and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 8th day of February, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:56. It will set again at 5:54. That's going to give us 8 hours and 57 minutes, closing in on 9 hours of daylight. That's a gain of 4 minutes and 41 seconds compared to yesterday, so assumably tomorrow will be over 9 hours. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 6:11 this evening. That's going to be a minus 0.55-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 12:50 a.m. of 6.83 feet. Our next low tide will be at 5:43 in the morning of 3.24 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow, almost lunchtime, 11:55 a.m., will be 9.67 feet on the east side. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 6:33 p.m. That will be a minus 0.49-foot tide, minus half a foot, followed by a high tide at 1 a.m. of 13.51 feet. Your next low tide will be at 6:35 in the morning of 3.99 feet. 4 feet, and your high tide for the lunchtime tomorrow afternoon on the west side will be at 12:31 p.m. and be 15.26 feet. Currently 33 degrees here in Kodiak under sunny skies. It has been a beautiful day. It was a beautiful weekend, and they're talking about a slight chance of snow now before 9 p.m., then isolated snow showers this evening after 9 p.m., mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 28. Northwest wind to 10 miles per hour will turn to the east after midnight. For tomorrow, scattered snow showers, cloudy skies, high near 37, east wind to 10 miles per hour. And for Tuesday night, scattered snow showers, mainly after midnight, cloudy skies Tuesday night with a low around 31, southeast wind to 10 miles per hour. And if you look at the Saildrone forecast app, it shows a big area of not too much wind all around us. A couple of gigantic lows, one in the Gulf of Alaska and one out in the Bering Sea over by Russia. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A high pressure will persist across the Gulf through Wednesday morning. That's my kind of synopsis. As a result, Marbot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory tonight and Tuesday. For today, northeast wind to 15 knots, except north 20, north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 6 feet. For tonight, northeast 15, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, east wind to 20 knots, seas to 8 feet. But as I look on Wednesday through Thursday on the east side, they are asking for east wind to 40 knots, seas to 23 feet, starting on Wednesday. Over on the west side, small craft advisory through Tuesday, northeast wind to 25 knots right now, seas to 6 feet in the Shelikof. For tonight, northeast 25, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, northeast winds to 25 knots, seas to 9 feet. And they're saying Wednesday through Thursday in the Shelikof, east wind to 35 knots, seas to 14 feet in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. Chiniak Bay, northwest 15, seas to 2 feet today. For tomorrow, east wind to 10 knots, seas to 3 feet. Tomorrow night, southeast 15, seas to 4 feet. And Wednesday through Thursday in Chiniak Bay, east wind to 30 knots, seas coming up to 11 feet starting on Wednesday. Up in Marmot Bay, northwest 15 right now, should diminish to 10 this afternoon, seas to 2 feet. For tonight, variable winds less than 10, becoming east 10 after midnight, seas building to 3 feet. For Tuesday in Marmot Bay, east wind to 15 knots and seas to 4 feet. And for Wednesday through Thursday, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 12 feet in Marmot Bay. So it's, they seem to be telling us weather's coming on Wednesday. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Tuesday. That's tomorrow. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held virtually. There will be no in-person attendance for this meeting. Public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT 100.1 FM right here. And meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions, please contact the city clerk at 486-8636. Similarly, the Kodiak City Council will hold a regular council meeting on Thursday. It will also be held at 7:30 and be held virtually. You can tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's on 7:30 on Thursday to hear that. And the City of Kodiak website has meeting packets and a link so that you can actually watch the meeting. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions, the clerk's office is 486-8636. Let's see, Wednesday, February 10th, that's this coming Wednesday at the library at 2 p.m., they invite you to join a special Valentine's Day craft making flower bouquets. Supplies are available for pickup until 1 p.m. February 10th. So I think their supplies are available right now at the library. The Zoom link is on the library's homepage, which is a great place to visit. Also on Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. is the next library trivia game. The Zoom link for that is also on the library's website and Facebook page. If you have questions or need help, call Lori at 486-8666. All are welcome. The trivia game really sounds like fun. Kodiak Public Library will be closed next Monday, February 15th, for President's Day. Poetry readings will be held monthly through April. Join the library to hear local friends read favorite poetry. Contact Ani to share a poem or to be part of this event. The next reading is Wednesday, February 17th. The library offers home delivery for those unable to get out of the house and curbside pickup on the side door. Call the library for this service. It's available Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. They are also open by appointment for in-person visits Monday through Friday at 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. for 90-minute visits. You must wear a mask and follow social distancing guidelines. And for more information about any of those things, call the public library at 486-8686, or again, visit the Kodiak Public Library Facebook page. The Kodiak Arts Council is thrilled to offer a free program for young artists age 4 to 8. It's called Cabin Fever Crafting. Free crafting kits are available in a tote outside the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium every Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Each kit comes complete with everything that's required to make the craft, and each craft has a detailed instruction video to go along with it. There's no need to sign up or do anything other than come to the auditorium and grab a free kit from the tote outside. Again, that's Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The companion video can be accessed at www.kodiakarts.org. Just look for the Cabin Fever crafting icon. There's a new craft and video available every other week, usually on Monday. Follow the Kodiak Arts Council on Facebook or Instagram to stay up to date with new crafts. For more information, you can call the Arts Council on an old-fashioned telephone. Well, the kind of new-fashioned now. 486-5291 or 942-5840. Also, the Kodiak Island Trails Network Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival is back. Your Kodiak Outdoor Adventure Film submissions are due March 5th for the March 12th Kodiak Fairgrounds Drive-In Film Festival. Films can be dropped off on a thumb drive at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Salmon Reception Desk. Contact Philip with questions or to meet you at the door. That number is 486-1871. And visit islandtrails.org/film. That's islandtrails.org/film for complete guidelines.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT. Two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.